Reading from Srimati Sandarbha Anuchet 309, Atmanivedanam. Om Jnana Timarandasya Ananjana Salakaya Aksiran Nirvam Yena Tajmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Sita Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama. General description of Atmanivedanam. Now we will discuss Atmanivedanam, or self-surrender. This limb of devotion entails offering one's entire being to the Lord, beginning from the body up to the pure soul. It's characterized by an absence of striving for one's own self. The offering of all practices and attainments to the Lord, and concentration of one's endeavors exclusively for the Lord. The self-surrender can be compared to selling a cow. Once a cow is sold, the seller makes no further effort to maintain the cow. The purchaser becomes solely responsible for the cow's welfare, and the cow works only for the new owner and no longer for the seller. Greetings from Vrindavan. Busy, because I'm leaving on Tuesday, and we just finished one Parikram group yesterday. It's not even Parikram groups. It's different people. Henry came with the son of his friend from school, and it's nice to try to present Krishna consciousness at this level, these people. Henry's school, you know, he went to school with senators. One of his classmates is the chief of staff for George Bush. And then his friend's son, Henry was going to dinner there, because they know it's vegetarian, and they said, we're so worried about our son, he's going to India. And Henry said, I am too, let him come with me. I'll take him to a holy place first and settle him. So it's really nice. And then some people from Kastuba's yoga studio came yesterday. And it's kind of a challenge because some of these people, they're not devotees, and to try to get them to enter into the Dham. But it has some effect. I don't know if I just got a letter from two people that I met. See if I can find it, but I guess I can't. Two people I met in Europe. I can't find that now. There it is. Maybe I read it last time. I don't want it. This is a person I met just when I was going to temple, putting my shoes, and he smiled at me, and found out he didn't know anything about Vrindavan. Maybe I read this. I don't know. I'm a little disoriented here, but I just got this letter. He said, in the last evening in the Dhaban, I felt I don't want to leave here. Very respectable person. I was laying down in bed, hearing chanting through windows, and many thoughts ran in my head and feelings and heart. Within only 3 days, I started to feel that this place is a very special place. I'll never forget that it was actually you and Nittai Gauranga who made it happen. These moments were really precious. One of the greatest feelings I ever had happened in the last temple of Arshan in front of the altar, where the leader chanted Jai and the devotees rhythmically, Radhe, Radhe, Jai, Radhe, Radhe, Jai, Radhe. This was something that took along and brought me to another world. This is a kind of response, so I'm hoping also and praying that somehow or other a drop of the mercy that we've experienced from Srila Prabhupada can come to these people and nourish their souls. Of course, these yogis that come are very advanced in another way. They're very, very decent people, mind-controlled, and give them the taste of devotion would be really something wonderful. And I've been going out, and naturally I've been going to the temples downtown, and I'm very, very careful with my glasses, because we all know that the monkeys steal the glasses. And just to give you some monkey tattva, when I went into Radha Govinda Mandir, you know, that's so many monkeys are in front of that. And I put on my glasses just to see the deities. And then as soon as I stepped out the door, I just said, oh, I got to, you know, I still have my glasses on, and boom, the monkey got him. Jumped up there, chewed him, twisted him. Crowd of 100 people watching it. But it was really amazing, actually, you know. And then I just went to, I was afraid I wouldn't be able to see for the Sangha classes, and I went to the optician, who I always suspect trains the monkeys, but that's another story. I went to the optician, really nice guy. In 5 minutes, he checked my eyes, and for the grand price of $40, I'll have two pairs of glasses today. And I bought for 150 some reading glasses. So we had our monkey science of monkeys there. But the real joy is the Sangha in the evening in my class, and we're studying the Chaitanya Charitamrita and studying very, very deeply. And there are a few qualified people, especially this Mother Srimati, and she's really, you know, really likes to come to the Sangha. She spends 3 hours a daily, one of her sadhas, she spends 3 hours daily hearing and chanting Gaura Lila and Tattva. So part of that time now she spends coming to my class, and it's really nice having another person there with insight into the pastimes. And we're studying the story of Gopinath Patanayaka, who is the brother of Ramananda Roy. And it's such an interesting story because he actually squanders the government money, and then when they call him on it, he insults the prince. And then the prince not only gets insulted, but consults his father, and they want to get the money back. So they have a capital punishment tool called the Changa, where it's kind of these swords, and they push someone into the pit, and he falls on these swords, and he's instantly killed. So they threaten him, and they put him on the Changa, and then the people come to Lord Chaitanya, and then finally even Sri Damodar comes to Lord Chaitanya, asking him to save him. And Lord Chaitanya gets very, very upset, and even threatens to leave Puri if they bother him for these things. And, you know, it's the brother of Ramananda Roy, the son of Bhavananda Roy, the brother of Vaninath Roy. Just a very, very dear family to Lord Chaitanya. So in studying the story, we're trying to figure out, what is the relevance of this story? Well, one of the main relevance of the story, it's both for the disciple, and it's for the guru. In terms of the disciple, he has to be very careful of approaching the spiritual master for material desires, to sort out his material mess, because that's not the guru's business. Although it was mentioned that when Lord Chaitanya was preaching in South India, when his servant got into trouble, Krishna Das by the Bhattacharyas, and was allured by the Bhattacharyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got him back. But there's a progression in life, and now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is entering into retired life more. He's sannyasi traveling. It's from Parivartikacharya Paramahamsa. And he doesn't want to be disturbed in his spiritual practices. And he said, what's next? And five people came to me, And then there was another point that came up that I always thought interesting. And even in terms of the service of the sannyasi to society, to be trusted as a representative of truth, one's neutrality can't be compromised. You have to represent the Shastra, not the needs of a family or even the needs necessarily of an institution. Or the political needs of an institution or the political needs of a family. You have to stand by the truth. If you don't, then people will doubt if you're representing the truth or you're representing some interest outside of Shastra. So from that standpoint, and also for the personal cultivation of truth, especially at that level of bhajan, you can't be disturbed. And it was actually... All these stories that I'm reading now, Ramachandra Puri, Balabhavata, it's really wonderful when you read Shastra and you see so much the practical application in your life. I'm getting so much out of it. It just changes your life on what you're supposed to do. And meditating on this story deeply, my desire to go deeper into spiritual practice, and in the same sense, not being at that level to go into Nirjan Bhajan, but still having responsibilities in the preaching mission and how to adjust them. But it's very, very interesting, the example of Lord Chaitanya, and it's a good example for spiritual leaders or anybody in spiritual life. You have to not overly deal with material necessities and set boundaries and parameters, whether you're grihastha or sannyasi, to protect somewhat your inner life. I wonder what happens then when those of you with children will have grandchildren. Is it going to wind up like my mother, where you're still on the phone and worrying about this and the daughter and the granddaughter and this problem, the health and the thing, you really, really got to think, carefully that there are stages of life, and even where we are right now, we can't just be dragged into the problems of the world, the material problems of the world. Although we should be compassionate to everyone and extend ourselves to help them, no doubt. But and Lord Chaitanya didn't want to interfere with the duty of the king, who extracts taxes from the subjects and then is so responsible for that money. We're reading in the Bhishma Dev story, the compassion of Prabhupada when he thinks of the modern leaders who just tax the people and bleed them and then squander their money, for their political interests, I heard some bridge to Australia, for $500 million someplace, when people are starving in the inner cities because that guy has to get votes. And so, Lord Chaitanya also respected that the government, the proper government, they tax the citizens. And they're very responsible for that money. And they don't tolerate that money's squandered. Don't bother me, he's saying. You know, the king is just doing his duty. And don't compromise my neutrality because you're my disciples, you're my friends, get me, et cetera, et cetera. He said, look, just go to Ben-Gon, Jog. You know, you want to save him, ask Jog-Gon. And then, you know, we're going to discuss today other subtleties in that story, too, because what happens is when Kashi Mishra, he comes, he's the priest of the king, and he comes, he's also housing Lord Chaitanya, the great devotee. And when he comes to Lord Chaitanya and says, why to be so disturbed? You know, it wasn't Gopinath Bhaktanayaka that came to you for his material desires. It was the devotees who had an affection for him, had affection because he was his family. And then, you know, Lord Chaitanya tells him how much he doesn't want to get involved in the material affairs of people. And then when Kashi Mishra tells the king, then the king, you know, not only absolves Gopinath Bhaktanayaka, but, you know, gives him a position and money and, you know, solves the whole problem. You know, all his material desires are fulfilled. But then the story is going to develop as the contrast between Ramachandra Puri and Gopinath Bhaktanayaka. Not Ramachandra Puri, Ramananda Roy, because Ramananda Roy, his brother, surrendered everything to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him full pension in every way. And here's one who people had to approach for his material needs. So then this is also very important. When one approaches God for his material needs, if one is very unfortunate, God will fulfill his material needs, but that's all he'll get. And sometimes when that happens, God will fulfill the devotee's material needs. But what will happen is one will feel the mercy of God. Because I'm undeserving and he's helped me. When he feels the mercy of God, then what happens to the devotee? He realizes that what he really wants is not material things, but that the mercy and love of God, which fills his heart and inspires love within one's own heart, is a much higher thing than material necessities, and then the devotee gives up that material need. And that's like Dhruva Maharaj. He approached God for his material needs and performed Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, concentrated devotion, with practice, but with need, with a motive. There's a verse, Akama Sarva Kamo Ra Moksha Kama Udara Di Tivrena Yogena, Bhakti Yogena,
Bhakti Yogena.
Thank you, Rasagatna. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta Purusham Param. That whether you have a karma, you desire, or you have no material desires, a kama sarva kama, you have all material desires. A kama sarva kama, or moksha karma. A karma means you desire to serve Krishna. You have no personal interest. Sarva kama, you have all material desires. You desire material things, or moksha kama, you desire liberation. Then if you're performing Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, intense practices of devotional service, Tivrena, very forceful, then all your desires will be fulfilled by Dhruva Maharaj. But there's one verse that says, yes, for that person who approaches me practicing Bhakti Yoga intensely for his material desires, for that unfortunate person, I will fulfill his desires, but that's all he'll get. But that unfortunate person, if his material desires are fulfilled, will feel God so merciful. And that feeling will fill his heart with love and devotion. And then he'll say, wow, I was asking, broken glass, as Juvamar said, by getting this kingdom, this kingdom greater than Lord Brahma, a planet greater than Brahmaloka, and he's granted it. To me, that was like, compared to the mercy of God, that's like broken glass compared to a precious jewel. So that's what happened to him. His desires got fulfilled. But then when he felt the mercy of Krishna, then he realized that that's the real thing we want in heart. The real thing we want in heart is our heart to be filled with love. And if your heart's not filled with love and devotion, you will always be dissatisfied. Look at the world. Somehow we're in the illusion that material things are going to satisfy us. But look at the world. People who have material things, they're not satisfied. They're frustrated. If their hearts are not filled with love, and I have to say, I was joking with the devotees here, because I can see that the American economy is just going down. I mean, it's got to go down. If I was living, to use an idiom, high on the hog by just borrowing money, it's an artificial standing of living. One day it's going to catch up to you. Can you imagine America is just in debt to all other countries in the world just to prop up the artificial standing of living, and now gradually that debt will be called? And I was joking to the devotees that, it's in traditionally the Indians were very, very poor, and the Russians were very, very poor, and the Americans were so wealthy in India, and that's where that term damn cheap Baba came to, because the American devotees first went to the market. They asked some marketeer, what's the price of that cloth? And, the guy quoted four times the price, but he compared to the American dollar, it still seemed very cheap. So the devotee said, damn cheap, Baba. And after a while, the devotees in the market were being called damn cheap Babas. But now I can almost see, I was joking, that, and therefore, it's always like we went to Puri, and Shastri was there, and, we were feeding all the devotees, and the poor Eastern European devotees, would come and humbly wait till we were finished, and we would feed them, Jagannath Prasad. And I was joking that, give it 5-10 years, and, the Russia and the Indians have so much money now, the economy is booming. So I say, well, you give it 5-10 years, the Indians and the Russians will be taking prasad, and the American devotees will be outside begging if they can come in, or trying to sneak in for free. So, anyway, the point I'm making is everyone has to change their orientation, whatever country they're in, and you have to make the object of your life to be satisfied with love and devotion to Krishna, and fill one's heart with that, because then one's needs become very, very reduced. One becomes very, very satisfied, and then your needs become reduced. And that's actually the way we have to be happy. Anyway, it's nice studying the CC, and maybe I'm thinking maybe after Bhakti Sundar, I'll do that. Now, I'm going to be running out pretty soon, so I got about 15 more minutes, because I'm taking these people on Purikram. And it's a real concentration to me, because each group is different. These people, they practice Vipassana meditation, and so in one sense, they're much more receptive and qualified. But in one sense, they know something. So I'm just trying to figure, in their Purikram, I think I'm going to sit them down, I'm going to do japa meditation, kirtan, and push them a little bit and see if we can't give them something of Krishna consciousness. Now, this item of Atmanavedanam, of self-surrender, really a wonderful analogy. It could be compared to selling a cow. Once a cow is sold, the seller makes no further effort to maintain the cow. It's an interesting practice because it says you offer your entire being, beginning from the body and up to the pure soul. And it can even get to the point of the ego, where you don't even care what particular identity you have. Your identity is servant of Krishna. I don't care this identity or that identity, this species, that species. I don't even have the ego of a human species. I just want to give myself to God fully. And in other words, what you're doing is you're giving yourself to God. So the analogy is when you give something to someone else, you no longer have proprietorship over it. And it's not even your responsibility for the maintenance. Now I'm in the hands of God. I'm doing your bidding. I'm doing your service. I'm not even responsible for that. You will maintain me. I'm just endeavoring to your service with the full confidence that maintenance will come. It's not going to anything. No longer. Now my welfare. What is that? Jivane marine. Whether in life or death. The song I'm just thinking of is Manasa Deho Geha by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Manasa Deho Geho Choho Kichuara Apila Tuapade Nanda Kishora Jivane Marane, life or death, everything is yours. That mood. So it's a little different from Archana, because Archana, you're offering different things according to scriptural injunctions, but self-surrender is all functions of the self completely. Giving yourself completely. I think there's some description of that there, what the difference is. It's upasana or worship consisting of remembrance, singing the Lord's glories, and serving the Lord's feet acquires the speciality being executed according to the injunctions outlined in the agamas. It is called archana. This is so because when worship in the form of remembrance and singing is performed in adherence to scriptural injunctions, is not separate from the path of archana, relationship with the deity, in which there is prominence of rules and regulations. Self-surrender, bodily functions, such as bathing and putting on cloth, are done only to the Lord's service. Hence, these functions are not detrimental to the devotion of self-surrender. So everything is just done. It's an internal consciousness that I fully belong to God. Everything. No, I have no proprietorship over myself. And the maintenance comes from him. I'm living for his desire. And I'm totally dependent on him. This is full Atmanavedam. The self is given up completely to God. And the example that's usually given, and it's quoted here, I'm just going around in a roundabout way, is the self-surrender of Ambarish. He gave everything, beginning with his mind, his speech in describing the virtues of Krishna's hands and cleansing the temple, his ears and hearing the stories, his eyes and seeing the deity, his touch, and touching the limbs of the devotees when he hugs them, his nose and smelling the fragrance, his tongue and tasting the food offered. In other words, all his senses are of the service of God. Nothing for sense but his mind, everything. He employed his feet in moving to the temples, his head in bowing down at the feet of Lord Krishna. His desire was wholly fixed in the servitude of the Lord, not in any form of material enjoyment. He did this in a way that the love inherent in the Lord's devotees may arise in it. And it, you know, and even when you clasp your hands together, and you clasp your hands together, and you put your hands together, folded hands like in a prayerful mood. That mudra literally means that these hands are yours. They're not mine. That's Atmana Vedana. There's no identification of the hands for the body. The one senses the hands are yours for your service. And one is feeling about that in all his limbs, all his activities. So it's a very, very deep internal consciousness that's developed at a very high level of devotional service. And one cultivates it. He's in that mood. He's consciously thinking. I have sold myself to you. And there are many, many songs I can't recall them. I've sold them. But from this day, I am yours. What is that? That's one song also, in that Buddha song at the end. I don't have time to read the whole thing, but I'll stop now for questions. And I leave here on Tuesday night. I'll get here Wednesday morning, so I will probably be able to have class next Wednesday night. And I'll still finish up this self-surrender. And the week afterwards, we'll do this Raghunatha Bhakti section, which is very, very, very essential to understand the devotional service. Are there any questions?
Maharaj?
Yes.
This is Rasikya.
Rasikya, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. On the point that you were making about the even the intimate devotees of Lord Chaitanya coming to him for some desire. I'm also reading in the CC and in the Madhya Lila chapter 24, text 129, the explanation of the Atmarama verse.
Yeah.
It says here, whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause someone to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. That was a really, really interesting point.
That is an interesting point. It's actually illustrated in that story, because once his desires are fulfilled, then he wants to surrender. So it means, when Krishna fulfills your desire, he'll do it in the way that you'll want to give it up, or he won't fulfill that desire.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a wonderful mercy, actually. If you could compare the, in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna first laments and reveals his mind about how he really doesn't want to do that because it's all his family and friends and everything. So that's also an example of that, isn't it? Would that also be an example of that?
He's lamenting for his family.
Well, he's approaching Krishna and saying, please enlighten me because I have all these questions about, killing family members and so forth. So that's similar also, I think. I was wondering if that could be compared to what you said in the beginning.
Let me see.
About the devotees approaching Lord Chaitanya, although in this case, that's a lila for us, for our benefit.
Right. Well, it's better, of course, to if you're going to approach someone, to approach God.
Yeah.
But in one sense, or depend on him. Well, maybe not. Well. Let me just say this way. I think in the example of Bhagavad Gita, the example is one's primary duty one's duties being compromised by attachment. I mean, I think that's the example of Bhagavad Gita,
right.
That
Arjuna
had a duty to fight on every level, and that duty was compromised by attachment. And that's just a classic example that we all face. I know I face that. Well, my duty is to become Krishna conscious. Well, now my family is opposed. So what's the higher priority? And I know I struggle with that when I first came to Krishna consciousness, and I think people struggle with that in different ways, in subtle ways. And, you know, that here's my service to Krishna, and in this particular instance, that's being compromised by, of course, the higher endeavor is prema, but that doesn't mean to satisfy that higher endeavor that we don't satisfy the various material needs and responsibilities. But when satisfying the material needs and responsibilities is not bringing us closer to Krishna, then we're faced with that type of dichotomy. But I'm not saying that, people in family life in different situations, that may not be in certain cases, that may not be, family responsibilities and duties and certain desires are part of their path. If they're satisfying them in a regulated way, prescribed by shastra, whatever the case is, that's not part of their path.
Right.
To come close to Krishna. But there are cases when it's not, and when one knows it, and then he's facing with that struggle. So I think that's the example of Bhagavad Gita. Let's see how it compares. The story of Gopinath Patanayaka is, he had a political problem.
Yeah,
he cheated the government.
Yeah.
And
that's quite different, actually.
Maybe it's different. And then they're coming to Lord Chaitanya to, help, to act on his behalf. And Lord Chaitanya didn't want to compromise
right. Kind
of his neutrality. So I think those devotees approaching him. Let me see what that would be. That would, okay.
Yeah,
anything else?
Yeah, that's a.
Thank you so much.
I'm thinking that point of the sannyasi has to represent the truth in shastra and not the interest of some political or social or personal
interest,
and how important it is, because whole societies can be ruined by people doing that. That's what happens in the West.
And not only that, but that was the role of the Brahmins and why they didn't take salary.
Yeah, exactly.
And why they had to be detached, because if they weren't detached, their ability to speak the truth could be compromised by their attachments, which could be taken away from the government.
Yep.
If you speak truth, you lose your job. Well, if you're attached in that way, if you lose, you become compromised in that way, which is always why, I always appreciated Jayadvaita Swami.
Yep.
Because of his integrity and his fearlessness, he'll give up anything to the truth. No one can intimidate him. And he's played a very, very important role in the history of the society.
Yep.
It's not like, he supported the Grihasthas when the Radhanamagar temple was raiding the temples, and preaching against the Grihastha temple presidents and take. He was the one. And when it came to the Zonal Acharya system, he was the one really, that spoke out. Or one of the people.
Uh-huh.
So, it's always important to have, and we have the story of Chandragupta, the king who fought Alexander the Great, and his advisor was Chanakya Pandit. He was in a hut. So if Chanakya Pandit was in a palace and attached to being maintained at a certain level, then he wouldn't be so bold speaking to the king truths that he wouldn't want to hear. So it's very, very important to have a class of people in society who is attached and can speak up. You know, it's rare. It's very, very rare.
Yeah.
You know, because if you have attachments and you're in some type of power structure, there's always a thought in your mind that if I speak something that dissatisfies them, even if it's the truth, I can lose my position, I can lose my facilities. And if you're attached, you won't speak up because you may lose money, you may lose facilities, etc. So it's the sense of, and therefore that's, I think, what Lord Chaitanya is feeling, you know? If I act, I'm going to lose my neutrality because they, you know, they're disciples and they're students and, or whatever, they're disciples and they're, you know, they're so close to me and now they want me to interfere with the government. You know, he said, what is it, am I a beggar? Am I, I'm going to beg for the king, you know, for $200,000 that he stole, and I'm going to beg to the king, we'll let him off. Well, no, that's government's money. You know, and the government took that from taxes from the people, and it's for the people. And you know, you're asking me to let him off? No, he should pay his money. And don't bother me with this nonsense and get my mind disturbed about this. I want to focus. And when we're discussing this, you know, obviously the relevance is there to leadership in a spiritual society. You know, where people, I said, sometimes with controversy, what does it mean that the guru accepts the karma of the disciples, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, minimum, it means that if he accepts people that are not qualified, or he accepts people that are qualified and then fall down or have problems, then he has to hear their material life. And that's accepting their karma. And then we have someone in a situation and he takes unqualified disciples and then constantly has to hear about their problems and then they're petitioning him for help and support. I was speaking to one guru who was feeling burdened this way, and he was in a particular situation and there was a conflict between people and the disciples were saying, you know, how come you're not supporting me, right? Because they decided that his godmother, who was in conflict with them, was also saying, you know, why are you supporting your disciples? Wow. And then the congregation was saying, you know. And, you know, the funny thing is he was completely neutral. And, you know, it gave him a realization more and more how, you know, it's so difficult to do those services and everything. Anyway, thank you, Rasika.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. You. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Who's that?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Govardhan.
Okay, we'll see you next week, Govardhan. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward doing the program at your house. And, I'm not that expert, but Dorothy has asked me to do kirtan, so I'm going to do my own kirtan repertoire, and I've been practicing. Okay. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Krishna Sitmambal
obeisances. Amiya, Jai, Harival. Yeah, Amiya, I think one day you have to, you know, come at some, like this time of the year. There's a ladies ashram, very, very nice ladies ashram about 2 minutes from me.
Okay.
I guess that belongs to ISKCON called the Kirtan Ashram with renounced ladies. And then you can come to class every day, you know, at least a couple of weeks. And then go on Prikram and you know, it'd be nice. We'll plan that for your future.
2009, year and a half.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, anyway, we'll end for today. Thank you all so much. And I will see you on Sunday. Hari, hari, go.